it's Saturday. It's not even 12 o'clock. It's the Anfield Wrap. And Liverpool have ruined weekends all over the show. Coming in on this brave Saturday morning, I've got Pete Bolster, Joel Penny and John Gibbons to talk through Aston Villa 4, Liverpool 2. John on the post-match show, I repeatedly said Aston Villa 4, Liverpool 1. I was so befuddled by everything I'd seen. The score, right? I've been doing this for years. You'd think the one thing I'd nail would be the score of the football match. To come, we've got Lee from Open Door talking about the joy building and the fantastic work that's going on there. Me and John were there yesterday as part of seeing where they're up to. And this Anfield Wrap show is brought to you by Peloton at the minute on Spotify. You can find all sorts of Peloton-based classes, no matter what sort of activity that you're looking for. So if you got a Spotify account, it is ad-free on there at the minute for Peloton. No matter, as I say, whether or not you've got Peloton equipment or otherwise, the Anfield Wrap has been partnering with Peloton over the course of the season. They are LFC's strength and conditioning partner, and we've been really proud that they've been our partner as well. So thank you very much to them indeed. Get on Spotify, check it all out, and go from there with them. There is also a hashtag Tour Spotify, TAW Peloton Club, wherein you can see everything is that we do there as a group and have done since we've been in there. So do feel free to join that. Let's start with it then. It was 4-2. John, it was maddening again from Liverpool. Maddening is the word. They're a hard watch at the minute. I suspect they're a hard team to play for. The manager looks to me like his head's burned out as well. I don't think Liverpool aren't driving anybody not mad. That doesn't quite work as a series of negatives, but I'm sure everyone understands where I'm at.
Yeah, the manager just looks like he wants the season to end and has done, you know, for a few weeks. Really, I think, you know, he keeps saying he's got a clear idea of what needs to be done and feels confident that they can sort it over the summer. But the problem he's got and the problem we've all got is there's still games to play, and actually there's, you know, still a small chance that they don't get Champions League next season. So these games are still happening, and every time the team take to the field, they and he look worse and come out of it badly. And you know, it's tough to watch because you go in with low expectations and then they still manage to find a way to disappoint you. Like, ever since United away, I've been looking at the team sheets and thinking, well, that's not much, you know, it's not much cop. You know, that's not a good team to go to Aston Villa with.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to remember that Aston Villa are above us in the table, the fourth, the, you know, about to go to your Europa League final. They're a good side, and Aston Villa away has always been a tough place to go to. And so you're going away to a good team and you're going with a side that you on paper just looks at it and think, well, that's not, it's not great. It's not going to do a huge amount, you know, mainly attacking wise, really. But still, they need to find a way to come out of these games with some amount of credits, and they're just not at the moment. You know, they're not doing that. The poor United, and you know, the way they lose that game, haven't got back into it, it's really, really frustrating. And obviously the way they started it, very much so. They probably should get beat by Chelsea, I think. And Chelsea had lost every game, you know, felt like in the calendar year up to that point. And then they should have lost it. And then they go to Villa, get them back, bring themselves back into it at 1-1. You think, all right, here we go, hit the post, and then just capitulate. And so they just look, they look a mess, don't they? Really, they look a mess, and they look frustrated with each other, but it's nowhere near as much as frustrated as we are watching them.
Joel, you watch them, and for portions, significant portions of the game, I would speak that in general, but last night, everything feels like it's on the verge of catastrophe. And then there is a catastrophe.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, yeah, it was. It always was. It was, you know, the first 20 minutes, they don't get punished, but they are punished by halftime for being daft. Second half, they get back to 1-1, as John says, but then they get punished. Because, well, you could see why they got punished, because they should have got punished before. Everything feels all the time, as I say, when it feels like they've got away with one, they haven't got away with one, it's just coming further down the line. And that's the way they play themselves. And that's that. To me, last night is another one where you just go, well, there we go again. It's the same thing. You just looked like you were doomed, and then you played like you were doomed, and then you doomed yourselves.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that comes from, you know, the setup or the lack of. You know, how we're starting a game and I manage to look so you know, loose across the team. There's so many gaps. And I take John's point about, you know, we're not look amazing on paper, but I think that is more at the top end of the pitch. If you look yesterday, we've got our first pick midfield with the three, and then we've got three out of the four of the main back four, and Gomez in there, who's, you know, not bad defensively.
So sort of experience.
Exactly. So you'd think at the very least that the basics would be met in terms of compactness, being able to have a bit of structure to manage yourself through the game. I think first 15 minutes, I'm seeing Aston Villa play a lot of vertical passes right through the middle of our team. And going forward, that's, you know, eventually going to unravel and going to end up conceding goals. And as we said, I think adversity has been the sort of word of the season, because we've just, every game it feels like we've not dealt with whatever adversity has hit us. And yeah, we just fall apart and absolutely capitulate. And you just want more. How we're being dominated game to game is just really concerning. I think, look, earlier in the season, there was arguments, you know, people getting angry at the manager saying that we missed chances or we conceded our first chance. But there was a bit of element of truth in that. We weren't completely out the game. But in the last few, we've just been sort of completely dominated. And the midfield especially has been outfought. And they've got Lindelof in midfield, for God's sake. You know, you think...
Well, the end with Tielemans and Barkley, and there's a lot of people who want Liverpool to go and buy a sort of the sense of an absolute midfield enforcer so we can get on top of people here. Tielemans and Barkley, is, you know what I mean? And, yeah. But they are absolutely running the show because Liverpool are second to everything.
Yeah. I mean, on more than one occasion, Tielemans picks it up at the edge of his own box and nobody challenges by the time he's at our box. And if we're going to play like that and have that, you know, lack of structure within the midfield, we're going to get nowhere.
Pete, every line, to Joel's point, is now dysfunctional. You have a sense, obviously, I think for a few games now, you've been watching them pick attacking lines and go, and well, say what you want, he's not got a lot to work with. But Joel's absolutely right. The three in midfield were the league-winning midfield from last season. Three of them were in there, plus Jones, who also was a massive part to play last season. He's in there as well. Three of the back four is the first-choice back four. Yes, the goalkeeper isn't the first-choice goalkeeper, but it just looks to me now like every single line of the pitch, every single bit of the pitch just doesn't function.
It's so easy, isn't it? You don't really know what you're going to get with Liverpool or meet, well, but the opposition do, and that's what's concerning. I think Ollie Watkins come out and said afterwards, you just knew that he was going to get chance after chance against them. You spoke before about that vertical pass. It's just a straight pass every single time. I remember a point in the season, and I was driving in here today, and we played West Ham away, and the manager sort of changed it at that point to nullify the opposition, and it was a bit boring to watch. And I think from that point onwards to around about Christmas, we were a proposition that wasn't a great watch, but we were getting results and we were grinding it out. And I come in here on New Year's Day or doing the game after New Year's Day against Leeds, and I said, there has to come a point where you're going to have to play a bit different. You're going to have to be a bit more attacking and show a bit more imagination to captivate this Liverpool fan base and harness that crowd, because it's just simply not good enough. But we've gone from that point where we were nullifying the opposition to a point now where we can't really attack, and now we're neither doing either or. And I'm thinking to myself, it's the penultimate game of the season. Champions League riding on it, like John pointed out before, that we still mathematically haven't qualified, but it feels like we sort of have. So it feels like it was sort of a dead rubber as well. So we really shouldn't have much to say. We should be thinking, if the manager's going to keep his job and he's going to go into the summer and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, this should have been one of those games where you go 0-0, the hell out of it. You go in, you got the foundation, like I've just said at the beginning, where you say it's a European away, you just kill the game. There was moments in that first half where Liverpool just passed it and passed it and passed it, and it was like a European away. Large parts, you were nullifying the opposition by keeping hold of the ball and so boring the hell out of the opposition, basically, and the viewer. But that's fine. Okay, get out of it. It's fine. You've got no real cutting edge. That's absolutely fine. But what you can't be soft over and over and over again, and you can't allow the opposition just to cut through you so easily time and time after again. And this could be any game. This is Aston Villa away. It could be Bournemouth away, when we played so well for large periods and then we're 2-0 down within 2 minutes on around about the 40th minute. It just seems like it's rinse and repeat all season long, and I think that's the major concern I've got with last night.
To Pete's point, John, and you know, we had a conversation, you and I, in there after Chelsea, they're neither compact nor aggressive. It feels like there's not enough men supporting the makeshift centre forward, but then there's not enough men back. Where are they?
Like, there's times last night where I feel like people were going in and out of alternative dimensions. Me and Joel were watching it together. Like, they step into an alternative dimension and come back 2 minutes later to go and point at something. It's like you're not supporting that attack, but none of you seem like you're back in any sort of organised shape. And that is, you know, you can pick one or the other. But at the minute, Liverpool haven't seen a set of stools they can't fall between. It's currently where they are.
No, and I think Pete's, you know, makes a really good point. So, you know, look earlier in the season and how we did change. And if Arne Slot was sat here now, he might say, well, listen, everyone, I got criticised for being too open. So I made us more defensive, made us more resolute, you know, made us hard to beat, went on this unbeaten run and everyone still slagged me off. So we tried to make us more attacking again, which is what everyone wanted. And now there's gaps and people are complaining. And I get that. I get what he's saying. And I think he has even sort of said that when he's done the CBS stuff with Carragher and things like that. But for me, I think you should be able to adapt between games what you do. So making us tougher to beat after those 3-0s, we had logic to it. But then when you've got Sunderland at home and Leeds at home, you've got to change because you're playing against these teams who've just come up and, you know, in Leeds' case, aren't showing much about it. And so you need to adapt to the threat in front of you. It would have been completely fine to go last night and go, we're going to approach this like we did Arsenal away.
Yep.
It would have been completely fine to say, remember when Arsenal away when we had no forwards, but we played very well and we got a 0-0. It would have been completely fine to approach last night like that. And some people would have criticised them because that's how it goes. But I think most people would have been, do you know what, fair enough. And I think he's flipped from one extreme to another. This season, you know, we were ultra attacking in those first games, you know, scoring goals, but there was big gaps. Then that worked for a while until it didn't. It unraveled quite quickly. You know, there was those two awful home games. And so we went ultra the other way and said, right, we're going to do this. Salah's out the team and we're going to sort of build from here. But then he didn't, like Pete say, know how to come out of that or know how to adjust sort of game by game. He's like, right, this is how we play now. And then, you know, there was sort of criticism around that. And so he feels like he's responded to that and ended up with this little bit of a nothingness, really. Whereas I personally just think the very best managers, you know, are able to adapt to the situation, adapt to where you're at, adapt to what, you know, you have available rather than just say, what he seems to do, which is, well, this is how we're going to play because these people have criticised me, or this is how we're going to play because this is my ideals. You know, it's a tough place to go to. It's fine to sort of dig in, and I still don't think he respects that Arsenal away performance afterwards enough. You know, he doesn't understand why. I think we were saying, you know that's sort of much better. And he's like, well, it's a 0-0, what are they all on about? And so I think that's what's frustrating me is that, yeah, your hands are tied a little bit. Yeah, you haven't, you know, been dealt the best cards, whatever, you know, analogy you want to use, but you can play them much, much better in this situation rather than just going, well, this is how we play, what am I meant to do?
Yeah, for me, that's spot on. I'm just more thinking like last night, it should have been a non-event.
Yeah.
Like, we should have been in here going, do you know, like, how are we going to make a show? What talking points are we going to have? And there's a rack of goals. There's a rack of chances that probably should have been goals. I think Ollie Watkins, for example, played well, but if he was really, really top, like Aguero level, wow, that would have been like...
But it was funny after the game, he was like, oh, they play high line and don't play offside. Yeah. I thought, like, why are you fucking offside so much then, Dickhead?
I just struggled with last night because I just think the season was petering out and you're like, okay, right, and to reiterate my point, if you go and get a 0-0, even if you lost 1-0, you're like, all right, Sam, we'll just finish the job next week. You got about the Champions League and off into the sunset. But that last night is just yet more evidence of something massively going wrong. And you said then, Neil, about they're neither this or they're neither that. Well, why? When you've got no forwards playing last night and a kid who can't play past the 60th minute, by the way, played 100 minutes last night. If he's the only outlet that you've got, well, then why don't you just defensively set up properly and just stop the opposition, play offside or don't play a high line? What one or the other? Do something. But for me, it just simply wasn't good enough.
Yeah, not at all. And some of the decisions throughout the game just completely baffling. I mean, how we end up with the right side of Curtis Jones and Chiesa, I just don't understand how that's a possibility with, you know, the second last game of the season. I actually thought Jones was a bit of a bright spark, but I think he's just completely out of position. I think all of his best work is when he actually just ends up drifting in centrally. So it's like, why don't we just play him in the middle?
When he comes in as well, he looks like he's got a point to prove, but not in a good way. So he's it's like his confidence is so low, and he's like, I'm now in a midfield position, so I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. He'd end up then keeping all the ball a bit too long, and then he looks for a pass that really isn't on, and overstretches his ability, really. And it feels like there's definitely a disconnect between him and the manager, because it just doesn't look quite right there either.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I'm still baffled how, I was going to call him Kevin McAllister then, Alexis McAllister. I can't believe he's, you know, finishing off games 90 minutes. And, you know, I think that third goal just really just sums up the stupidness throughout the squad. I mean, you've got McAllister on the floor for absolutely no reason. You know, he gets a graze to his shoulder, to the point where the manager's even telling him to get up. And amongst that, you know, 3 minutes or whatever, the team is not set up correctly. And then we concede. And obviously we all see Chiesa, you know, stuck on his line, playing them all on side. And you just think, what is going on with the squad? There's just so many moments where they just come across as, you know, brain farts. I mean, there's one where I think it's our throwing, and the Aston Villa, they all jump, you know, to play them offside. Martinez grabs the ball, and our players are just standing there watching Aston Villa counter on us. It's like no one seems to be reacting to the fact that they, you know, could potentially be on through a goal, and, you know, the ball isn't good enough, so we get away with it. But it's just those little moments, and you think, Rod, they're really not sort of switched on, and they just those little margins can really kill you.
The McAllister thing where he's throwing himself down, I think that's a sign of real desperation at the moment. I think that's a sign that they're thinking, you know, we need something. We need a bit of luck or something to beat them. They weren't doing that last year, you know, and so I think, and it's the same with the Watkins trying to get him sent off for the second yellow light. They're all going mad and everyone's going. It's desperate, is what it is.
Is it down to standards, Swellett, though? Because there'd be loads of chat about standards over the last few weeks, but I'm sure if that's one of my teammates, I'm like, get up. Like, get up. Like, I just feel like the throwing yourself on the ground, and the fact that he didn't even get touched either, so he's literally being brushed. It's like a little tiny push. There's no, like, physical... He hasn't been physically hit or anything like that. There's VAR. We can see all the footage back. Yeah. I'm just thinking... I remember a moment, I think it was Redden away, when Torres went. And previously, before that, he just started the season and he was throwing himself on the floor a little bit, and there was some stories behind the scenes that he was told, don't do that here, don't do that in the Premier League, don't do that in English football. And then he proved that night that actually he can manage that physical... the physical, the opposition that you have to stand up to, basically, in that game, and he was fantastic. And I feel like now, and I'm not going to jump on every single moment about standards, but I just felt like, again, that last night, you're talking about the lack of organisation. You had 3 minutes, he's messing about on the floor, and I just think, you're probably right, John, it is desperation, but why is he doing that?
I think it's because they don't think they can win otherwise. Yeah. I think that's what it is. That's because they wouldn't be doing it. Like, I think he thinks, I've just got to try and get someone sent off, so maybe we'll get someone against 10. You know, it's the same with the Watkins thing. Like, it's not a second yellow, is it? Come on. Like, none of them really think it is. Like, you know, they're just trying something because they don't believe in themselves enough.
But they got in their own heads. And that's one of the things that drove me mad. It was like, it was so psychologically poor, you know, in all the ways in which they were daft over the course of the night, John. I thought this was another one where you end up coming off second best. You've got them riled up. You know, that's probably in loads of ways one of the goals that makes Ollie Watkins the happiest he's ever been. Right in front, bang in front of their end. Just being all this nonsense over there. 3-1 against Liverpool. I mean, if you're Ollie Watkins there, you're thinking, what a day, what a night. Yeah. This is absolutely brilliant. Not only are you getting beat, but you're giving them the satisfaction. I felt the same when we were playing Man United. I felt like not only United, you know, watching the game thinking we're going to get beat here, but I'm thinking not only United going to beat us, but they're going to get to enjoy it. And I don't want that, you know. Yeah. And I just look, I think part of it at the minute when I'm watching them, John, is I just think they look a joy to play against.
Well, that's it. And earlier in the season, we had that run of away games where it was all these teams who were direct. And like, remember we going to Brentford, or Brentford play like this, and Arnest Lott was telling everyone who'd listen, oh, we don't like teams who do this and stuff like that. But now it's everyone. Like, and so, like, earlier in the season, you know, we played a lot of direct sides, and it was like, oh, we just need to play somebody who plays the way we like, which is a ridiculous thing to say, but that was it. And then we got the teams who played like that, and we're like, we can't do this either. And it's like, you know, it's like, whatever the opposition, want to do. It, seemingly our kryptonite. Oh yeah, we're fucking passing through the middle. We don't like that. High balls, don't like that. In man,
you just go to wide areas, do you? Not sure.
Yeah, and it's like whatever the opposition do is not for us. Seemingly, and you know, we are the nicest team to play against. It's proved by the fact that, you know, Chelsea and Spurs go with these big long losing runs and then play against us and look like they're having the best time alive.
But also concede.
Yeah.
They both go 1-0 down.
Yeah.
They both go 1-0 down.
Yeah.
On us going 1-0 down, Joel. I mean, let's be clear, I think they start the second half well. This is one of the things that, you know, in the cold light today, when you try to pull yourself back, you go, they actually start the second half well. They pull it back to 1-1. They look the likelier side, and then there's the mistake. Players can slip over. I'm not, you know, I want to be clear about this. There's other things in the game, so Bosley did that wound me up much more. Players can slip over from time to time and you can be punished for it. And that's the way in which it goes. But the point then is, it all goes to absolute ribbons at 2-1. They are, as we're talking about with McAllister, they're then a mess at 2-1. So they've got themselves back in the game yet again. I'll come on to that in a minute. Yet again, Liverpool have got an equaliser. At the point at which you think, all right, as I say, they go behind, it's a bit of bad fortune because he slips over, but they're just so weak in the immediate aftermath. They're just so, so weak as a collective.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only sort of solid 10 minutes we had, maybe from the second half up to 55. And that's where the Gakpo chance comes from, you know, where Rio hits the post. So we do show we can, you know, with a bit of, you know, good skill and you know, directness, we can get at them. But as you said, you know, the slip comes, which, you know, I'm not gonna have a go at him for. These things happen. But Liverpool to the past, we know they would have digged the mate out. You know, they would have looked at Szoboszlai and said, "We're gonna get you out of this. Don't worry." And they would have put it on Villa and may potentially get a goal back. But there's not even an inkling of that. I think that's the most worrying thing. It's not like we're batting down the arses and Martinez having man of the match. We're just nowhere to be seen.
There's a pattern through the season, Pete, of Liverpool get the equaliser but get nothing from the game. And I went through before, and there's been a fair few equalisers, genuinely no messing around. The last time we got the equaliser and got something from the game was the 31st of January against Newcastle at Anfield. And I think Newcastle could be a bigger mess than us. Yeah. You know, I genuinely think Newcastle could be a bigger mess than us. There's a game against Fulham where we still come away with the hard luck story because of Harrison Reed, but we do go 1-0 down in that game, and that's around the turn of the year. But there's been so many times, I think we've only picked up 2 points from losing positions over the course of the season. But what annoys me about that, as I say, it isn't even that we've been poor and then gone on to get beat. So many times we've got equalisers in games and then we yet again go and look for another rake to stand on like Sideshow Bob.
I think it's because we're so one-dimensional. I think that's what John was alluding to before, the fact that when Arne Slot come out and said that we don't like to play this opposition, we don't like to play that opposition. If you put Liverpool on just for 10 minutes and you only watch 10 minutes of the game, you could be fooled into thinking, we're going to win this. And when we had the equaliser last night, there was a little period of time and you're like, oh, they're going to make a bit of a mockery of us and they're going to go in and get the win now and they'll qualify for the Champions League tonight. And it's just what Liverpool do. But they're a bit like the English weather, aren't they? They're a bit mad where anything happens at any moment. And I'm watching it with the lads last night and I'm like, I've seen this pattern before. And then,
United, yeah, exactly the same.
Chill out, boys.
Don't get too excited. And you know, there's loads of heads, isn't there? And they want to... I wish I had that innocence, to be honest with you. I feel like I've seen
stolen from you.
Yeah, I can't unsee what I've seen now. And that pattern of play that you're referring to there, Neil, it happens. You've got that pressure. And soon as... We're not ready to be punched in the face. And soon as we get a punch in the face, we don't know what to do with it. And it's like, oh God, the opposition look like they want to win the game. And then they just hit that diagonal border, that vertical ball, that straight pass. And it's just so easy to play through us. And we've never really combated it. And what's more difficult, I don't know if we're worse or the opposition are better at setting up against us because we're so easy to play against. But nevertheless, we're at a point of the season now that you'd think that you would have slowed down this weakness in our team and the goals that we're conceding that are very similar over and over again.
Within that, John, to Pete's point, games against the top 10 away. It was doing me head in last night on Sky when they kept saying top 9 because they felt they could say, well, it's only 1 point. But what that did was it removed the Hill Dickinson. So I think that, you know, Sky just needs to take a back seat and just sort of say, because who says top 9?
Yeah,
top 9 is not a thing. You want to say top 6, say top 6. Say top 10. Yeah. Don't say top 9.
I'll even let 8 go.
Yeah, I'll even let 8 go. 9 just feels like we just want to include that one against Everton because we have to say it's only 4 points and we have to say, well, they beat Everton.
Yeah.
But when you looked at the list against the top 10 now, because it's everyone, all the away games are done, thank Christ. But you've still got to watch them at Anfield, whether you like it or not. You look at the games lost, and you can't look at any of them and argue they deserve more. You know, I just sort of went through the list. Arguably, they possibly deserve all three against Arsenal, ironically, and they should get double points against Everton.
Yeah.
But you're looking at that, so it isn't even as though you go, well, there's a bit of variance in there, there's a bit of bounce of the ball, there's a bit of this, that. Listen, the early concession against Bournemouth, a lot of that is bad luck. But you still come away at the end of that match when the final whistle goes and go, well, we didn't really deserve to get anything from that, the way in which it went. What underpins this? Because that is, you know, as I say, when you're assessing performance along with looking at results, what underpins this as to why they've been so bad against the top 10 away?
I think it's a lot of things. I think a lack of resilience is one thing. The fact that, and even the manager said, if a team have a good 5-10 minutes against you, then they score. And when you go away against all those teams that you've mentioned,
with good sides because they're in the top half.
Yeah, they're going to have good periods in the game. And so when you go away from home against, you know, the teams who are one of the better ones in the league, like, you'll often say, listen, they're going to have a good period. We just need to weather it. We just need to get through it. Well, this team can't do that. And so they might have, like Pete said before, 10 minutes where they look good. I thought they actually passed it pretty well last night, you know, in plenty of times. I thought we were sort of passing it well. So we'll have times where we look decent. We'll even have times where we create a chance or make something happen because we've got good individual players. So Rio hitting the post, you know, last night, it wasn't a complete shock that happened because he's a good footballer. And there are others in the team, although it doesn't always feel like it. But when the opposition put us under pressure, we just fold, and they'll just score. And whether that's concentration, whether that's just the fact that they just don't want to dig in, it's not in their psyche to sort of do that. But then a lot of these players have won stuff, including the league last year, so that's quite hard to sort of comprehend whether they're not ready, you know, we're ready for games this season, ready for when they're not going in with the right attitude or mentality. If this is going to be tough today and we're going to dog it out and there's going to be times where we really need to work for each other, maybe there's an element of that not being there. I don't know what it is, but whenever it's hard for a bit, we never go, do you know what, that was a tough half, but we got in with a 0-0, or, you know, they really had to sort of dig in there, or the keepers had to bail us out. Like, there hasn't been any of that at all this season. There's just been like, oh, it was half for a bit and we conceded. And so these places where you go to when you know you're gonna have to suffer a little bit, these lads don't want to suffer at all. They can't, they don't know how to do it. And that's where I think you'll never pick up points away from home if you can't do that. If you can't go, listen, this is going to be hard, but us together, you know, we're going to get through this, and we might even nick one because this is the plan, you know, to do that. They look like they're without a plan, but also without any kind of togetherness and resilience to get through, because the other teams are good and they get to be good and they get to have a go at you, and you've got to have a way you're going to get through that, and they haven't got one.
I don't think they believe me. I think that's one of the parts of the problems. I think we all look at it and we've got our viewpoints, and I go into a game and I'm not quite sure Liverpool are going to win that game, especially when we're away against the top 9 or 10, Neil. But I think if I can think that, I think when I've played in football teams myself, and you know quite well if the opposition are better than you and if they're stronger than you and they're a bit more tougher in the tackle, that you lack the belief. And I'm sure all these footballers, as they've gone away on international duty, you've seen Fonny and Vert ping them in, you've seen Szoboszlai do well, all these various footballers, and have good international breaks, but because they all back themselves as individuals, but it's not a collective in this team. And I think the makeup of the squad they don't help each other. There's nothing there to, like, you know, you look at the midfield, and for example, McAllister, he's been slaughtered all season, but the fact that he plays in a double pivot now, and the fact that he has to cover so much ground for a player who hasn't got the legs to naturally do that, then that doesn't get the best out of him. So whether that's the manager, whether that's the transfer committee that have put this group of players together, and then as the season's gone on and it's wore down the confidence, I think it's a combination of it all, really. But I don't know what next and how do you bring that back. I do think there's a lot of nice footballers in there as well, but I don't just think it's because they're nice and they're not tough and they're not mentally tough. I just think they simply don't believe they can get something out of the game.
Yeah, it definitely is a belief thing. I mean, they're not willing to suffer. I think a lot of teams, you know, as we mentioned, there's so many good teams that we come up against. There's going to be difficult periods. And Liverpool, you know, to go back to the analogy of being, you know, punched in the mouth if they were a boxer, I feel like they'd be cowering in the corner waiting for it to happen. And then as soon as it hits them, they're down and they're out. You know, I think they
look great on a punch bag.
Yeah, exactly. But when they're in there, they fall to bits. The bright lights, you know, the sweating and the trembling, and when we get hit with a big one, they just can't seem to, you know, find it within themselves to get at them. And I've got to be honest, I think, you know, it's a coaching problem as well. I think, you know, we always talk about you go to away games and a manager sets up to get a result, and what a brilliant bit of management, but this manager just hasn't done it.
It's got to be an ability thing as well, though. So, like, I understand the whole boxing thing, but if you go back to boxing, there's loads of boxers when the two fighters are fighting each other all week, they both tell each other they're going to knock each other out. Only one knocks the other person out. So we can, like, go back to Curtis Jones early in the season, and he said, lay one on someone. I always say, they can't lay one on someone because they can't get near them in midfield. They're not even close enough to foul them. That's the problem. Do you know what I mean? I reckon I could run past Alexis McAllister. He's definitely a better footy player than me, but I reckon I could beat him in a race. And I think that's part of the problem, that you're saying that they're not set up properly. I think they're not set up properly to get the best out of what we've got. I think we're trying to be something different than what the players we've got at our disposal.
No, I agree with that.
I think it's as much about the opposition, John. My theory is, I think what happens, and I think you see it in these games, they know or realise as the game goes on, Liverpool just don't carry any real threat. And so they themselves are a bit like, we'll just push on here. We'll just push again. We'll go another 5 yards. And they get this encouragement as it wears on. And then we collapse in on ourselves. So there. And then what happens is, even then, you know, games where it then looks like we're chasing the game and we look a bit on top, I think that they're almost dictating terms at that point, and then realise we can go back and play on the front foot when it suits, because we just don't carry a threat, enough of a threat. And we don't carry a threat to you know, I was thinking last night, not for the first time this season, anyone who just looked like they could genuinely run in behind, who plays number 9 for this Liverpool side and make us look better, because you're just watching them push further and further up the pitch, going, well, he's not going to run away from us. There's no one in wide areas who's going to run away from us. They had some concerns over Ingemar as the game's growing and shifting, but apart from that, they're just almost, their attitude is, well, it's fine, we can decide where our defensive line is. You don't set it, we set it. And that's what I'm watching every single game oppositions do. We decide where we defend, you don't decide.
Yeah, and I think that's been happening at home as well. You've seen, that's not just away games. At Anfield,
Chelsea is a good example.
Yeah, at Anfield, you've often seen teams growing confidence against us, really, and you know, look a little bit unsure at first, and then you can almost see the cogs whirling 20 or 30 minutes in, going like, they haven't got a lot, they don't look loads of confidence. There's something in it for us here. I think the forward situation is killing us, and this is where I have got some sympathy for the manager, because I think, you know, he's got no Ekitike, he's obviously got no Isak, and barely had him at all this season. Salah's not fit enough to start, so he's Gakpo, you know, Rio, when he'll pick him, did pick him last night. I thought he played well, you know, much better than he did against Chelsea. But then a little bit of what we can get out of Chiesa, and so his arms are tied here. And I don't think it's funny with the Gakpo thing, because he's often been accused of, like, you know, loving Gakpo and stuff like that. I think I had a little look before when he first came in. First game, he starts Diaz, Jota, Salah. Gakpo's on the bench. He doesn't start Gakpo in a league game until October. So he's not picking him, because he wants pace out wide. He's always said it. He's always played with that. And so we've got this situation now where Rio aside, who is still a kid, like we've hardly got any. So we haven't got any pace out wide. We haven't got anyone like you says who runs around the back. So I have got some sympathy for the manager for the forward situation that he's ended up with, because I don't think I can't imagine it's what he would have picked to have. Obviously, he hasn't picked, you know, chose to have the injuries, you know, but in terms of even the personnel, I'm not really having it. But at the end of the day, this is what he's got, and he's got to try and find a solution. And that could be making yourselves more compact. That could be, okay, well, you know, we're only likely to get one goal today and maybe a set piece, so let's try and concede 0 or 1. Let's try and do that. Do you know, like, I know everything on the football pitch is connected, and I know the better you attack, the less likely you are to defend, because they're giving them more. I understand all that, but I still think there's a way of going into a match and saying, we're not going to concede 4 goals today. I think there's a way of sort of doing that, and you know, with what we've got, that he's not choosing to do. So it's tough for him at the moment, but he's making it tougher.
I think it's not even, you know, it's Joel. it is that feeling that not enough's been done to get to grips with it. You can include the defeat in Turkey and Paris if you want. Paris is obviously a different kettle of fish to anyone else we played in this league. It's worth pointing that out. But you can include it in there as well. And it's not even about wins. You know, for me, it's not even about wins. Right now, for instance, if they'd got a draw at Brighton and a draw at Bournemouth and a draw at Villa, they'd be fourth and it'd all be over. They wouldn't be third. None of us would be sitting here right now pairing. None of us would be going, oh my God, what a football team. Can't wait to watch them again. Yeah. But it's not about wins even. It is about, you know, coming to the solution of what just gets us through this next phase. And those games against Brighton, Bournemouth and Villa, all three of them come in the second half of the season when we know the league title's gone. We don't need to go to those grounds to set up and win. We don't need to go to those grounds to make a point, to go and score three goals. We don't need to do that. When we step foot onto those pitches, a big part of the job is saying, well, you know, there's a job to be done today, boys, which is we get out unscathed.
Yeah, and if we did pick up a couple of points, you'd at least be able to say, oh, they've got a bit of grit, they've got a bit of something about them, you know, fair enough. They're not at their scintillating best, but...
Imagine if you had a couple of attackers in because they've shown they're not solid.
Yeah, you can start making these sort of arguments, but as it is at the moment... The in-game management from the players themselves or the manager, it's just terrible. I mean, you know, we had it last week against Chelsea with Cucurella. They obviously make a bit of a tactical switch and then he's just getting in time and time and time again. And yeah, you can point to the manager, but I'm looking at a lot of experienced players there on the pitch. Like, someone sort that out. Like, surely Frimpong and Curtis Jones swap anything, do something to sort it out. And, you know, it's like the even yesterday with their first goal. Obviously, they're all running over to the set-piece coach because he's done a little bit of a tactical setup. But you think, can't someone spot that on the pitch? You know, if I'm looking at Morgan Rodgers and acres of space, I'm probably
in the place
thinking,
he most wants to kick the
exactly.
ball.
Exactly. He's like most known for that type of goal. He hit the post, didn't he, against us earlier in the season. Different angle, but it was, you know, fairly similar. These little things that they're just not reacting to, you just like, you know, it leaves you pulling your hair out, essentially. And yeah, as I said, you know, if we had a bit more sensibility and in-game management, then we could have picked up a few more points.
I'll just on that, for me, that Pete, the lack of faith, the faith that we've got in them that, you know, we're talking about on this show and on the shows, but it also looks like they've got in each other. The lack of communication that they've got with each other, the lack of everything that it takes to sort of be a football team. This is my thing with all of this, the way this season's ended up going. You know, it's not, for me... The way I keep going back to now is the wreckage, because they can still get the Champions League, like you said before. They're probably likely to get it still than not, the Champions League place. So you get to say, well, that's minimum requirement done. But at what cost? I'm going to keep saying it, at what cost? Because it looks now like a football team that needs to be reconstructed from first principles in terms of the faith that they've got in the collective.
Well, that's the thing I come back to. So when we talk about qualifying for the Champions League, who's going to be playing in that Champions League? So... We're going to talk about a lot of players that are going to need to come in next season. There's a lot of players going out. And sometimes we like to remind ourselves that a football training grounds and a football club is still a workplace. And what I've seen this season, it's more of a workplace than it ever was. It doesn't look like a family. It doesn't look like a community. It doesn't look like they're playing for each other. And I'm not even criticising them for it either, because if there is such a disconnect, you've had a lot of players come in last summer. So at a difficult time as well. So when you're grieving, and it's not good for the lads coming in either, who are thinking, wow, I thought this was my dream move. So there's already a barrier there. Then you've got Mohamed Salah leaving. You look to you, like you've got Alisson Becker leaving. You've got Andy Robertson leaving. Curtis Jones looks like he's going to go. These are big figures at the football club. So big figures, big characters. So when we're talking about qualifying for the Champions League, when I look at them, I still think they're doing everything possible for the manager. Rightly or wrongly, I think that's what they are. I don't buy into the fact that they're not playing for the manager. I think tactically, that why we're criticising them is because they're doing what the manager's asking them. I think that the reason why they're not switching at right back and stuff is because they're respecting the football club. I think they want to do it for the fans. I think they want to sign off on a good Liverpool career, but at the same time, it's human nature not to be thinking, well, I'm moving out soon, I'm doing this, I'm not going to be playing in this Champions League, this isn't none of my business. And it's not like they're leaving on bad terms, as if like, oh, I hate Liverpool. You see him in the Mohamed Salah interview, he couldn't love Liverpool anymore. But there is that natural part of you that if half the football team, or a good percentage of it anyway, are going, it all of a sudden feels like a very sterile place. And that place and that connection that we had with the fans, with the players, the manager, that was all fantastic over the last few years, just isn't there. And they really, really need to sort that out, because this changeover of personnel, whether it's staff, players, coaching staff, whatever it is, isn't good every year.
Okay, back in a second to talk about the manager, but before then, we've got Lee Pennington from Open Door, talking about the joy building that is being created in Birkenhead. Went to see him yesterday.
It's Neil Atkinson with Lee Pennington in what is a bit of a building site. It is the joy building that Lee has been developing through the charity Open Door. You'll remember Open Door from when the Anfield Rap was doing some fundraising with them last year, and we're going to be doing a little bit more now, but we're going to tell the story firstly of Open Door, secondly of the joy building, and then thirdly everything that Lee and his team are going to achieve here. Lee, you started Open Door many years ago, and now you find yourself looking after a £5 million public investment into a new building, a new facility. So it's some journey.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Yeah, we've it's been in two parts. Really, we had a period of time for 7 or 8 years where we were a small thing in a little shop in Liscard, and then we created the Bloom Building, and that's been the transformational moment of taking us from, you know, a small team supporting a few hundred people a year to something that's much more well-known and trusted and recognised, more than a few thousand each year. So
when we think about the Bloom Building, we came to film there, and the Bloom Building was an innovative space in terms of mental health provision and how that can be done, firstly, differently, but also it can be more open, more welcoming, and it can also touch other different parts of societal needs as well. So the Bloom Building, when you refer to it as transformational for Open Door, it really did have a profound impact on how you saw everything you did, every aspect of the service.
Definitely. It matched the scale of where, of the ambition of where the charity was at that time. And I think the most important learning from the Bloom Building has been that, like, you know, us exploring health by stealth and the power in spaces and brilliant places and brilliant, innovative, radical things within them, the power in them to actually transform support processes. And Bloom Building, it's a case study in. You can tackle serious, challenging things like suicidal ideation or self-harm or disordered eating or care and issues around experiencing young people living in care. But you can do it in ways that are colourful and joyful. And if you do that, that has a positive impact on actually what's being delivered.
So this is what you mean when you said, you just used the phrase quite casually there, this is what you mean by health by stealth.
Yeah.
And that's when we're going to talk about this facility, stepping up on that again. So what do you mean when you say health by stealth?
In reference to us, the way that we understand it and we are working to that model is about creating an amazing building, creating amazing spaces that people want to spend their time. You fill those spaces with amazing people who people want to spend the time with, and radical, interesting, engaging, fun things. And then at the same time, you sort of, in an appropriate way, you sneak in services or support or counseling or therapies or things that people might need. Because if you sneak them into that environment, it gives those things a personality transplant at the same time as it allows you to engage the disengaged and engage people who maybe couldn't or wouldn't go down traditional avenues of support. Just, you know, shine a different, just give a different personality to the wider conversation around mental health.
So that was the Bloom Building, and the Bloom Building with its sheds and with its different ways of going about counselling, with the ability to access services as quickly as was always the ambition within the Bloom Building. You've now been working on, and last time we had a conversation with anyone at Open Door, we talked about this facility just by Hamilton Square in Birkenhead, and this building, which was disused, and a full renovation of this building. As I say, it's £5 million of public money to pull this together. You're assuring me it's going to be in much better condition in about 8 weeks or so, with a view to in the second half of the week opening properly. At the minute, it is a building site. So what is it that you're looking to get in this space as part of that renovation?
It's a massive step up. I mean, there's a venue in here, there's a purpose-built like cafe, there's workshop and spaces that are small, medium and large. There's areas where tenants, and because Joy Bloom Building has been very much us and a couple of friends, yep, in Bloom Building, you know, making that happen and doing the work in there. This is about broadening that out, and a key part of the vision of Joy, aside from any parties and gigs and events and arts and holistic and wellness stuff or whatever it is about having brave parts of state institutions who want to step outside, for example, of the NHS estate.
Yep.
If you look at young people's mental health services and CAM services up and down the country, you know, they are typically in NHS environments. It doesn't need to be like that, but it takes brave people within those organisations to say, we want to be in a building that is more colourful, more joyful, and everything that we're about. So, you know, Whittle CAMS, which is known as My Mind, are going to have an active presence and be permanently based here and part of what they do. Other third sector partners and people maybe doing training or arts and creative or comics and zines with, and reaching potentially young people who are neurodiverse with SEND diagnosis and needs. It's this coming together that is great in the sum of its parts.
And also the idea of mental health provision for schools in the Whittle being based out of this building as well. So it is, yeah. When we say mixed use, I think at times you can, you know, people can sort of have quite a limited view of what that is for you. That it's almost a term without limits. You feel as though everything that can happen here, you know, you're eager to bring it about.
Yeah, definitely. And if we can, you know, why would we, as a charity, we know we need to strategically, we know that young men, for example, don't access emotional wellbeing support and mental health support in the same way that young females do. We strategically want to target that. So if we're then based and living with and sharing a home with the team within CAMS that are going out and reaching into every primary and secondary school in Wirral, well, we can work together on, you know, maybe training them in what we do, them training those in what we do, and think in one team mentality, make the most of an increased reach that we will have together, and ultimately just have fun doing it.
It's also a huge community facility, within Birkenhead. There's going to be, as you said before, an event space that's in there. There's going to be a cafe building, play areas, along with the idea that it's a huge working hub for a large number of people as well. You said there about networking within that, people understanding where they're up to. So sort of combined spaces there as well. And you're going to have what was in Open Door for the counselling purposes was the sheds. There's going to be a huge raft of shipping containers out the back as well. It's, you know, it is taking what was in the Bloom building and it is multiplying it in scale.
Multiplying it in scale, but I think realising the vision that we have been exploring in a lower level way with Bloom building. And it's ultimately just about environments that are playful. And I would say it's not just children who like to play and have fun. And, you know, if we in the shipping containers, for example, there's going to be a slide connecting the upstairs down to the bottom stairs, which, you know, anyone can use. And, you know, it's just creating an environment of playfulness, of colour, of vibrancy and energy, which, you know, great things and important things and serious things happen within. But at the same time, let's just, you know, explore in the same way we were exploring the key things with Blue. Key things here is the power of human connection and the power in communities working better together. I think is the things we're going to be exploring in the coming years.
It's very exciting. Are you excited?
I'm excited. A little bit scared, but we've done a lot of you know, joy has been, you know, it's been about 5 years since we put in the initial funding request. So, and then we've done loads of engagements and basically I've spent the last 5 years, last 15 years with the charity, it's been growing to this, but the last 5 years telling anyone who will listen how it's going to be the best thing and the only thing of its kind in the country. So I stand by it. We're pretty close. You know, I believe it more than ever, but at the same time, we've actually got to do it now. So yeah. It's good. Positive nervousness, if that's a thing.
Yep, absolutely. Listen, it's much more than just a building. This is a really important point. A building like this takes a lot of support. If this building is going to work and function, it'll actually, you know, for all the brilliant work that's being done here and being done by Lee, it'll actually be made by the people. That's the way this thing operates, and that's the way in which it always will be in the charity sector. It's the people that make up the charity sector first and foremost. So whilst the building is a huge opportunity for the area, not just of Birkenhead, but for the city region as a whole, I think it is also worth pointing out that it needs to be an opportunity that can be realised by the people who are here. That's why the Anfield Wrap supported Open Door going back about 18 months ago, and we're back now wanting to do more of that across the next few weeks. So if you text Joy is coming, down here on my piece of paper, it's all in caps. I don't know if it has to be all in caps. No one's clarified that, but let's just say it does. Joy is coming, all in caps. Also, that makes it feel more emphatic if it's in capital
more
letters.
Intense.
It's more intense. And it's 70450. That will donate £10. We'll be having more ways and means in which you can get involved, and it's a facility that we also intend to be
involved in the future as well as part of the Anfield Wrap. It's a pleasure to speak to Lee, to hear about all of this. It's a pleasure to see such ambition being realised from the point of view of care, first and foremost. So thank you very much, and let's get back over to the show. Great stuff there. It was fantastic to go and see the building yesterday in Birkenhead. If you want to support it, 70450. Joy is coming to do that, so please do that if you're not able to do so. It's a fantastic project that's going on from Lee and the whole team there at Open Door. Album of the week is Aldous Harding with Train on the Island. One Stop is possibly my favourite song of the year so far. High praise indeed. It is the absolute business. Very haunting folk stuff from Aldous. She's from New Zealand. I'd never heard of her until I heard One Stop. She's done about 3 or 4 albums, which I've listened back to, and some of them are pretty good, but Train on the Island is the best of them. But I would say that you're always the one that you heard most recently, you know what I mean? That's now her first album as far as I'm concerned. The other stuff, that's the way in which it goes. But I'm a big, big, big fan. So Train on the Island, check it out if you get the time to do so. All right then, Pete said something, John, in the first part of our conversation today, and he said, you can't unsee what I have seen, which, you know, sounds remarkably foreboding.
Is that one of the tracks on that album?
Yeah, you can't unsee what I have seen, and insofar as it's possible, I mean, I say that insofar as it's possible to say publicly, it appears Liverpool are saying publicly they intend to go into next season with Arne Slot. So the problem with this is you can do chats about resets, and obviously the league table resets, you know, in a week's time. Probably Arsenal will be top, Manchester City will be second, Manchester United will be third, and then we'll look at it in July and everyone will have zero. The league table resets. That does happen. Everyone goes back to zero. You don't carry anything forward. But Pete can't unsee what he's seen. And those players can't unplay what they've played. And I'm, you know, part of what I think is exceptionally hard in this conversation is you can do chat about resets. You can do chat about bringing new players in. But at the minute, top 10 from last season, 8 of them are all looking at Liverpool going soft touch and the others at Everton. And that is, you know, I think... For me, I just don't know what a reset is in this context, or I think it's so hard.
I think things can change quickly and moods can change quickly. I think he'll just take a lot, and I think he'll, you know, if they do want to stick with this manager, they need to start much, do stuff, they need a really fast start, they need a bit of luck with the fixtures, and they need to win and probably play Welsh Street from the off, which a new manager wouldn't sort of have to do. So it's going to be harder for him if they do stick with him to, you know, at the start of next season, he's going to have to go some, if you like. Fortunes of big clubs can change. I was reading on the way in that Man United finished over 40 points behind us last season.
Yep.
He was 42 points behind us last season, and this year they'll finish above us. So that's how quickly it can change. People might say, yeah, but they swapped the manager halfway through. You know, which I accept, but I don't think that's the full reason, you know, for it. And so if you, he seems obviously determined to stay. He seems pretty convinced he is going to stay, and he also seems pretty convinced that he knows exactly what's wrong and exactly what they need to sort it. Whether they can sort it, you know, they need to get those players in the summer. That obviously becomes trickier. You know, we're still a great job, we're still Liverpool, we still pay big wages, so I'm not worried that they can't buy anyone, but we're less appealing than we were last summer. If you're competing with Man City for players, or whoever it might be, Arsenal for players, whoever it might be, you know, you've got to accept you're less appealing last summer than you were at the moment, so it's going to be tough. They need to get a lot right. If they want to stay with Slot, they need to get a lot right this summer. They need to have a pretty much a perfect window, I think. And then they need the fixtures to be kind at the start of next season, and they need to start well.
And they need the injuries to be kind, and they need to get the World Cup unscathed.
Yeah, or they need a number 9. Who's playing number 9 first game of the season? Is it Alexander Isak? Because he couldn't play number 9 yesterday. And so you need a lot to go for you. So it's possible. So when people say it's impossible, I don't agree with that.
I agree with you as well.
I think it's possible. I think there's a way... Everything comes together and they have this perfect window, and then suddenly he's got the team that he's always wanted. You know, he's got a number 6, which I think he's wanted for 2 years. He's got these pacey wide men, which he said he's wanted from the start. You know, they're able to then get the best out of others, in particular, you know, Florian Wirtz, you know, other things sort of happen alongside that. that allows us to push on with other additions as well. That is all possible, but it's really, really difficult, and it's a big gamble. You know, it's you know, hitting on 16. It's all of that, and it feels to me like it's more likely not to work than it is to work, because some of those things are just out of your hands. You know, having a perfect window is really, really difficult. Even if it's close to perfect window, is really difficult. Say you're going to have this great pre-season when the World Cup's coming on, and then you get start. You know, we could just have twice of a set of fixtures. That could just sort of happen, and so you just have some terrible luck. You know, 25 minutes in, someone gets sent off in your first home game. You know, Darwin Nunes puts someone because he's come back. You know, and people. People can't unsee what they've seen, and you're right. And listen, people do actually forgive quickly, and people do actually, you know, forget quite quickly.
And but people want the football team to win.
Yeah, exactly.
People
I always
think
team
to win.
You know, Kev Walsh is my mate. Everyone knows he came on here because, you know, he's my mate. He's obviously your mate now as well. But, you know, I sort of brought
him. He's everyone's mate, John.
He's everyone's mate. If you haven't met him, yeah, give yourself 10 minutes in pose. And he's bought you a pint and you're in a headlock. You're like, I'm meant to buy it, drink this pint. You've bought me, Kev. You've got me in a headlock. And so that's the way, that's the sort of way he is. But I always think when I think he's like the typical person on the cop, and that's why I think it's good that he's on this. And when people say they don't like him, obviously get a bit defensive because he's my mate, but also I think, well, I don't think he really just likes Scousers, because he's just a Scouse fella. He's on the cop. And what I love about Kev is one week he's slagging someone off, like Cody Gakpo, he's a fucking prick and all this, blah, blah, blah. Next week he scores the win, I fucking love Gakpo. And I'll say, you were calling him a cunt last week. He's like, yeah, I'm a dickhead, aren't I? Like, that's like, you'll just laugh. You'll just go, oh yeah, I'm a dickhead. There's loads of people like that who'll just go, oh yeah, if we win 9 of the first 10, I'll go, oh, honest, that's amazing. And then you'll go, what about that you said last year? And he'll go, yeah, oh, I'm a dickhead, aren't I? What do I know? So there's not as many people who are as unwilling to either change their mind or just go, I was fucking chatting shit there, as people think. You know, not everyone's is a trench. In fact, most people are like Kev, but he's an extreme version of Kev. A lot of people, he's the most Kev.
He's his own provisional wink.
Most people are sort of like that. And so I think actually, if people do see something much better and do see something that is revolutionised by these players coming in who Arnest not want to, who are going to allow him to play how he wants, and it is much better, people will just go fucking great, because like you just said there, they want to. You want to buy into something, you want to enjoy the matches, so it is possible that people do forget it. But if at the same time, if we start the season and we see the same old, and we're looking at them not competing, people aren't, but they're just not going to stand for it. And, you know, similar to the Rodgers season where he gets another one and it looks a little bit better and we're like, oh, here we go. We win the first game, don't we? And then we draw at Arsenal, but it's a good draw, it's a battling draw. Yeah, Joe Gomez plays left back. You know, there's and then it's home to West Ham and they get beat 3-0 and everyone just goes, nah. And from that minute, he's fucked. And we can't have that. We can't have one bad results in the first five
with bad performance,
and that's really hard. That's really, really hard to say. We can't do that. Whereas a new manager, whoever that might be, would just be given more. Would just imagine if Jürgen come back this summer. Imagine, and this is an extreme example again, but imagine if Jürgen came back and went, right, I'm going to come in, but it's going to be tough because, you know, I need to get everyone fit. You know, you've heard all the stuff about what it took me. You know, I need to get Isak to press. That's going to be difficult. He can't even get on the pitch. And all this, it's going to take time. Imagine how much fucking time he'd get. You know, and then others are somewhere in between them. You know, Xabi Alonso is probably nearer Jürgen Klopp in terms of the time we get. You know, you just get more than he's going to get. So it's possible that he turns it around, but he's on the shortest leash imaginable, and that's a hard place to be.
I think contractually, he's on the shortest leash possible as well, because he's got less than 12 months left on his deal once that season starts. So
well, him, Edwards and Hughes right now, as we say, they've got 57 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, to sort of stretch the point, we're 6 weeks away them having less than 52, less than a year. That's your and this to me is part of what undermines a continuity argument for me, Pete. I can see a continuity argument, But at the minute, there is not continuity inbuilt.
No, exactly. Yeah, and when listen, I've heard the argument that Liverpool are a fantastic football club, and everyone's going to want to play for us and sign for us and stuff like that. But I gotta go back to a normal job. When I go to a normal job, I want to know that my line manager is all right, and they're sticking around. I don't want to get there and feel
Chelsea buy loads of players, though, is what I would
they
say.
They do, but like generally, the most. Yeah, but generally it doesn't really work out. Recently.
No, it doesn't. but they still go. That's what I mean.
Yeah, you can argue that they go for the wrong reasons. They're on high wages, and it's the capital city and stuff like that. But I personally, that's what I would feel like. I feel like anyone who's responsible for their career going into Liverpool would want to know where they're at. But I'm just going to touch on what you said there about a perfect pre-season. I think about having a perfect squad, Arne Slot has gone for a lower squad numbers. And I think it was Melissa Reddy tweeted about the principle of signing players, basically of how to win a Premier League. Ian Graham's, one of the metrics was that availability was higher than peak performance. Isak's peak performance is clear to see where you go, wow, I was so excited to watch him come in. But the fact that he's missed, and you think it's 33 games, Frimpong's missed 20 games this season, Mohamed Salah's only missed 11 through injury since he started for Liverpool. Yeah. I think when you've got a smaller squad, you can't then have a Joe Gomez as your backup. You can't have a Conor Bradley that was susceptible to injuries. You can't have these players that are going to miss big portions of the season. And then when you start the season, you say we have one bad performance, we lose. I think if Liverpool won 6 but didn't win them well, and then had a moody draw, and then a 3-0 shocking result, I think that would be enough. Not just because of that, I think the way we're playing when we're winning as well is so important, because this manager, when we talk about a reset, Neil, you can't reset what you've seen. We're going to go back to what I said before. He's been
to be fair, he got slaughtered off to Palace. I couldn't believe it, away this year. So yeah, he won the first 5. I think it was 7 in all cups. We lost to Palace, and people were going, and I was like, what the
exactly.
fuck?
and that's fair to me point.
I think
if Arne Slot come in this summer, then you'd buy into whatever it is he's saying. But because we've lived through the experience of the past 2 years, you feel like you know him to a certain point. And I think we're going to struggle to actually truly reset. Of course, we're going to go into the ground. Of course, we're going to support our team. Liverpool fans want to see us win. Of course, we do. But we want to love our manager as well. I think that's a point that's missed as well, that we actually want to love our manager. I think we're one of the only football clubs in the world that are so uniquely connected to the manager. And if Liverpool win and they win well, there'll be no problem with a reset. But I think the things that need to be put in place and for all that to work is where I struggle with it. And before FSG or whoever's in charge of that Liverpool boards and making these decisions, it will be a very, very expensive mistake if this goes wrong, whatever way they go.
Yeah, and the thing that really concerns me, and John and Peter sort of have touched it, I mean, the main reasoning or defence of the manager this season has been, you know, all these different mitigations that have happened throughout the season. Now, look, this is probably not going to be something as, you know, tragic and impactful as Diogo last summer. But when you go to, you know, the on-pitch stuff and the squad management, as John mentioned, it's not going to be easy. You know, there's a World Cup there. You mentioned that, you know, a core group of the leaders are all going to be moving on. There's going to be lots of mitigation going into the next season. And if he's proved that he can't handle it till to this season, you know, what makes him think that going forward it'll be an easy fix? And, you know, we talk about sort of overhauling the squad and getting new players into the team. But, I mean, in my lifetime, the 2 times that we won the league, we barely made any transfers. Usually it came on the back of, you know, having momentum from the end of a season going into the next season. And as we mentioned, if he's in his third year of his contract, he's probably not looking to do a transition. You know, the number one goal is going to obviously to be to win trophies. But how we're set up, I just don't know how he takes that any momentum into the next season. As we've already said, a bad start is just going to be a disaster and completely toxic. So, yeah, I just struggle to see how he brings it forward. It's not impossible, like we said, but it just feels like a lot needs to go well for that to happen.
All right, bigger picture, I need a favour from Leeds and Manchester City. It's genuinely mad we could still come fourth. That at the end, they might rank these football teams 1 to 20, and the history books might show Liverpool were the fourth best one.
It just can't be right, that. I reckon someone's got to count again.
Yeah.
The maths has gone wrong somewhere.
Just don't start the season again.
The maths has gone wrong somewhere. We need a favour right now, obviously, from Leeds and Manchester City across the next couple of days. We're recording this before the FA Cup final, before those games. Listen, if you've got through all of this, thank you very much indeed. And thanks a lot to everyone who's coming to do this on a Saturday after Liverpool have been beaten by 100 goals to nil by Aston Villa. It's very, very kind of them. If you are into all of this, do subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. You can get the app, and there'll be lots of stuff on what has happened and what needs to happen next from a Liverpool point of view across the next 6 weeks or so, segueing ourselves into and then beyond the World Cup and a season that is to follow as well. So come and join and be part of the whole thing with us. That'll be absolutely fantastic if you can. It's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe or download the app and go from there. But regardless, thank you very much to Ash behind camera and in charge of sound, to John, to Joel, and to Pete, to our friends at Peloton, to Lee at Open Door, whichever way it goes, whatever it is you're up to for the rest of the weekend. Try your level best to enjoy it, because whether you like it or not, Liverpool play again next Sunday.